good, and welcome to a very, very special edition of the Empire Podcast. And this one is to mark the end, for us anyway, there's one more day to go, of Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con, Comic-Con International, to give it its full official title, here in San Diego, the heart of the whale's vagina, or the vagina of the whale's heart. I'm not entirely sure which way it is around. And I have just finished. I've just laid down my tools for the year, not counting this podcast, of course, which I'm recording on the roof, or one of the roofs, of the Hilton Bayfront Hotel, where I've just spoken to a lot of the cast and filmmakers behind Avengers Doomsday, which was the big finale, I guess, to the Marvel Studios panel in Hall H. And that's all very, very exciting. And I'm joined on the roof, you'll be glad to know, it's not just me filibustering for half an hour or so, by my Empire colleague, Dan Jolin. Hello,
hey,
Dan.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Dan. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a professional.
Dan is a professional,
I
have to say.
I'm a professional. Dan, I'm a professional.
I have a press pass. I'm out here in my official capacity as an Empire twonk, doing stuff for Empire. Podcast, social channels, Instagram, stuff for the website, stuff for the magazine.
Stuff.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah.
Dan, you are here. Genuinely, you are here as a professional.
I am.
You were on a panel yesterday. Tell us about it.
It was great. It was great. It was called.
What was it called?
Nerd Stuff and Sword Things.
Nerd Stuff and Sword Things,
which you may remember is a line from the movie Masters of the Universe.
It was burned into my brain.
Yeah.
I knew exactly what you were talking about when you said that.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was all about kind of like the fandom of Masters of the Universe. And
why were you on the panel, Dan?
I was on the panel because I've written the Art of Masters of the Universe book. So it's the making of book for that movie.
Coming out when?
Coming out in September. I don't have an exact date, I'm sorry. So I was invited to be on it to kind of speak about kind of like my experiences of putting the book together and all the kind of behind the scenes stuff that I saw and everything, which was great. But it was kind of weird because I was sat right next to Chris Butler, who wrote the movie.
Yes, wrote that line.
And indeed wrote that line.
Sword Things.
Indeed he did. So it was like kind of strange getting asked questions about the making of Masters of the Universe when I'm sat next to the guy who wrote it.
Yeah.
But you know, it was fine. It seemed to be fine. You were in the audience. Thanks for coming.
I was in the audience because I'm a supportive friend.
Yeah.
I'm loyal. I genuinely got a buzz from it. I mean, I hate that you're on a panel. I hate it, you know, because I've been trying to get on a panel in this fucking place I've been coming here since 2003. With a 9-year hiatus. So this is my first time at Comic-Con in 9 years. But
it's,
I've been coming here since 2003.
It's my first time ever.
I'm stopping this podcast right now. I hate you. I fucking hate you. I hosted a virtual panel during the pandemic at SDCC.
Well, there you go.
But it's not the same, Dan, is it? It's not the same.
You know.
I want the smattering of mild applause when my name is read out.
Polite applause. Obligatory applause. And it's mostly the other panelists who
it's
are
It's mostly
clapping.
The other panelists who are very, very supportive. And one person in the audience going, woo, whenever Empire gets mentioned, which was me.
Yeah.
No, I was genuinely thrilled for you. It was a wonderful thing. It was great seeing you on that panel. It was a fun panel. It was interesting. The format was interesting, I have to say.
Mm.
I'm gonna put my objective hat on here. And it's not how I would have presented a panel, in which this is to say that, oh, by the way, if you're wondering why I'm stumbling more often than not and not cutting it out, I don't know if you can hear the music in the background. You may not hear it by the time I put all the noise gates and filters on and whatnot that I do for the podcast. But we're on the balcony here, and there is music playing through speakers. I think it's copyright free. I hope it's copyright free.
It's definitely porn movie music.
It's porn
it's
movie
like
music.
It's like 70s porn
Dan
music.
Dan and I have plans immediately after we finish this podcast. Boom, chicka, wow, wow. So because of the music, I'm going to not be able to cut things out. So we're going to have to go completely in the flow here, Dan. So that's what we're going to have to do. But the way that the panel was formatted was interesting because you had five speakers and the host, who was a producer on the movie.
Yes.
Nate.
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 Nate. That's Nate? Correct.
You don't know his surname, do you? Yes,
I do know his surname, but I'm very tired and my brain has turned to jelly and you put me on the spot and now this is absolutely terrible.
That is amazing.
Nate Atwood.
Okay. Nate
Thank you,
Atwood.
Of course.
So Nate Atwood introduced it in a very interesting way. So he gave each member on the panel about, what, an 8-minute slot to speak? So there wasn't a lot of back and forth as you would normally get on a panel. But I thought it was quite interesting.
A little bit of interplay. We kind of butted in on each other's comments from time to time. Although I tried not to do that too much.
You were too polite. You
know, I am very polite.
You mentioned Bexley Heath.
I did.
Which is where you're from.
So, yes.
Where I play golf.
Specifically, I mentioned Zodiac Toys in Bexley Heath, which is not there any longer.
Is it not?
No, it used to be Zodiac Toys and Nuxley Toys.
Okay.
And Zodiac Toys was nearer to my house.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Good story.
It's a good story, but I love that because when Dan's section was on, he was talking about his work on the Masters of the Universe art. What's it called? The Art of Masters of the Universe. A title as simple as that.
The Art of the Masters of the Universe.
Yeah. They flashed up a picture of Dan on set because you were on set multiple times and you were holding the Sword of Power and you confessed that you're so feeble and weak that you were unable to raise it above your head. Yes.
It is true. It is very heavy, though. In my defense, it's very heavy, and I don't do strength training. So, you know.
No, you're a film journalist, man.
I'm going to have to start doing some strength training.
Is there a buff film journalist? You know buff film journalists? I mean, Amon kind of keeps...
He's pretty buff. I wouldn't mess with him.
No, he's tall as well. Robbie Collins tall, but I wouldn't say he's a unit, although he did start working out for a long time.
James gives aggressive vibes, but I don't...
James could kill you multiple ways. James could kill you with a paperclip, but I don't know that there's a buff film journalist. I don't know that there's someone who, when I'm at a film screening, someone walks into the room and I go, fucking hell. You know, it's not like Kermode comes in and he's got a fucking six pack. It's not like that at all. No. This is what happens when I don't cut stuff out. Anyway, this ordinarily in a podcast, that would be cut out.
Yeah.
But now we have to roll with the punches. Yes. Anyway. Dan,
I was going to say, one of my favorite bits that happened was at the end of the panel.
I love that too.
It was great. But so they gave us all like little swords of power that we could actually lift above our head.
Yes, you could.
And I was told I could keep it, but then at the end, some sort of like eager looking children came up to me and I thought, oh, they want to talk to me. Okay, well, what do they want? And they went, can we have your sword? I gave it to them. Because that is the true power of Grayskull.
That is the true power,
The true power of Grayskull is to give the power away.
Yeah.
So there you are.
Whereas Rage Against the Machine would say take the power back.
Yeah, but I would take it back and then give it away again.
Okay.
Yeah. It's an ongoing process.
Would you give it away and give it away and give it away now?
No.
Again, this would be cut out.
I can't stand the Chili Peppers.
You can't stand the Chili Peppers?
I can't stand the Chili Peppers. No.
I mean, they've got a wide variety of songs. What are you talking about?
No,
one of those people who's just like, no, I don't like that band, therefore everything they do is just persona non grata to me?
Well, just play me something by them and I'll tell you if I like it or not, and I'll probably
won't. I'd play you something like Road Trippin'.
Mm.
Road Trippin' with my two favorite allies.
Okay, I'm cringing.
Scar Tissue?
No.
Under the Bridge. Everyone loves Under the Bridge.
No.
Under the Bridge, sometimes.
No. No, I can't stand that song.
Anyway, Dan was on this panel, and it was a real joy to watch Dan in action on this panel. I was so happy for you. It was a wonderful, wonderful thing to see. Also on that panel was Chris Butler, as Dan said, who was the writer of Masters of the Universe, and also Wildwood, which is the second Travis Knight film out this year. It's going to be out later on. It's a big old stop-motion Leica extravaganza. And after that panel, Chris Butler was kind enough to sit down with me in a fairly noisy room. So nothing I can do about that. Once again, these microphones are very, very good, but I don't know how much background noise they're going to be cutting out for a 15-minute chat or so. So I thought, you know what? Let's stick him in this podcast roundup. Let's do it. Here's Chris Butler. Enjoy. Chaos is what they should call Comic-Con, to be honest, but Chris Butler, you are here. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm trying to avoid most of the chaos by hiding in the green room.
Yeah, how's it been? I mean, how was your panel, first of all? You're here for a Masters of the Universe panel,
which was
a lot of fun.
It was fun, yeah, and it was an opportunity to meet a bunch of very talented creative people.
And Dan Jolin.
Yeah.
I can say that about Dan. I've known him for 20... Oh, my God. I've had an existential crisis in the middle of that sentence. I've known him too long. Let's put it that way.
See, I've met him through master's.
Okay.
Obviously, he was doing the Artaud book.
Yes.
And we did a Zoom interview. I thought I'd met him in person, but you know. And he said, "Oh, you're taller than I thought you were." It's like, it's a Zoom interview. What are you basing it on? With someone standing behind me?
Yeah, if you have something to scale,
yeah,
you know, maybe a nice handy like wall chart in your background. Yeah. That's the thing that can help. But yeah. But I have to say, you know, I didn't have a sense of your height, but I saw you at the panel, and you have your guns out, sir. Now, this is an audio podcast,
yeah,
but you're a writer, Chris.
Yeah,
writers are not meant to have their guns out.
Well, I don't know whether you noticed, but it is the new line.
It is
Mattel,
the new line, yes,
which is Jim Bro Skeletor.
Jim Bro Skeletor,
which was one of my finest points, I think, from the movie, was having, for those who've seen it, they will recall at one point Skeletor delves into Adam's mind.
He does.
And we see him in Adam's Earth gym.
Yes.
In Oklahoma City.
Yes.
And that was one of my high points of the whole thing. Jim Bro Skeletor. So I'm doing the brand proud by wearing a Skeletor muscle shirt on stage.
It looks good. I could not pull that off. It looks good.
Well,
on you.
Thank you.
So Jim Bro Skeletor, was that something you wrote in the script? Did you write those words, Jim Bro Skeletor?
No, I
okay.
didn't. I wrote the scene.
Okay.
And then I remember Travis sent me some concept artwork and said, what do you think? Like, can we get away with this? And it was Skeletor in his little gym hoodie and his dumbbell in hand. And I was like, this is amazing. I don't know whether we'll get away with it, but we should do it.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. No, and now I've got on the floor. I don't know whether you've had a chance to go on the floor, but the big Mattel booth, which is very Masters centric this year.
Yeah.
There are Jim Bro Skeletor action figures.
I can't get one.
You can't get one.
No, they sold out.
I was hoping you could get two and give me one, but that's...
I've dropped a few hints. So maybe one will find its way to me. But I even went online, and it sold out within seconds of going online.
It's crazy. It's flying off shelves.
Yeah.
It's, look what you've wrought. Look what you have done.
No, it's great.
With Jim Bro Skeletor. You may not have written those words, but you wrote the concept, and that's it. So presumably some of that cash goes to you as well. You get a little bit of, you get a little taste of that pie.
No. Don't be ridiculous. I'm just happy to wear the shirt.
So you're here in the Masters of Universe panel. It's it's been a busy year for you. It's going to be a banner year for you when I think people look at the IMDb. But even though Wildwood's been in the works now for some time, but you've got Masters of Universe and Wildwood, both Travis and I joints as well, of course. When did that relationship with Travis begin? First of all,
When I first went to the studio in 2006, he was animating, I think, on Coraline. Yeah, of course it was Coraline. Yeah. God, it's a long time ago.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And I met him and thought he was a lovely fellow. And I suppose this all started really with Paranorman, because at the end of Coraline, we needed a next project. And I remember Henry Selick asked me if I had anything that I was working on, anything that I was writing. And I had the first act of Paranorman, which I showed to Henry, and he was like, we need to show this to Travis. Showed it to Travis, who, you know, I didn't know him very well. I was a little bit intimidated by him, but he called me into his office and said, this should be, I want this to be like his next movie, and I want you to direct it. And I think I sat in silence for a moment or two, but that was the start of it, because I think he saw something in that script that really resonated with him. We are the same age, so we grew up watching a lot of the same movies, interested in the same stuff that was out there, both 80s kids, and I think that's been a big part of it. He thankfully likes what I write, and I love what he does. It's been the most rewarding creative relationship I've ever had. I love him to death.
When did you first click? So you had that meeting. He says, "I'd like you to direct this."
Yeah.
By the way, do you have a second and third act at this point?
He did say that. He said, "Where's the rest?" And I said, "It's at home." And it wasn't. So I'll just go get it.
Yeah,
I'll go
like, get it.
Just give me 6 weeks.
it's in a shoebox somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. No, I frantically finished. I mean, I had the whole thing mapped out.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't written out. And that was the first script I'd ever officially written. So, yeah, it started there. And of course, myself and Sam Fell directed that movie, and Travis was an animator on it. He animated some of the big sequences with the zombies first breaking out of the graves. So I was briefing and directing Travis, which was, you know, bizarre.
This is ostensibly your boss, right? I guess. Yeah, and that's how you...
So, of course, everything he did was amazing. But it was as well.
Is he a David Brent style boss?
No. He is a true polymath.
Yeah.
Like, whatever he lends himself to, he seems to excel at it. And so, yeah, it was actually a really easy thing to direct him on stuff, because he did such beautiful animation on that movie.
But, you know, Travis is a polymath. He is very, very versatile. I mean, you've got a big year, obviously, with Masters and Wildwood, but then so does he as a director of both of these films. What can we expect from Wildwood, first of all? You could say at this point in time without someone whacking you.
I mean, it's been a long time coming, because we first started working on it in... I first started working on it in 2014, I think.
Jesus.
And I think we always knew it was going to be a pretty epic project. And the studio just wasn't quite ready to take it on at that point. I know Travis had talked to me about his aspirations for it, and that it is like a truly epic fantasy movie, and in order to be able to technically achieve it, some more developments had to be made. We've made a couple of movies since then, and you know, every time we make one of these things, we are learning and we apply what we learned on the previous movie into the next one. And honestly, like, because it was so long between me writing it and then it being made, I purposefully didn't look at too much stuff, because I wanted to be surprised by it as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So when I eventually did see some of the puppets and the sets, I was blown away. Particularly, there's footage out there already in some BTS stuff, but the general character, which is the giant eagle character, that puppet is insane. And I know this studio, I know this industry, and I was blown away by that puppet. It is magical.
In what way?
Just technically, the way it... I mean, it's animated beautifully.
Yeah.
But just technically what they've managed to achieve in a practical puppet, it makes your heart sing, because it's practical effects.
Mm.
It's real. This thing is real, and it's just glorious. So I'm pleased that I distanced myself from it, because when I did eventually see it, I felt like an audience member, which is great. That's such a nice feeling. You know, it's very easy to be so involved in the process that nothing is really surprising.
Mm.
But I was so surprised by this. So I think it's going to be a gorgeous... In terms of the scope and the scale, I know we say this every time. We've never made a movie that's as big and majestic as this. We say it every time, and every time we go further. And it's the same thing again, you know. It's a pretty impressive movie.
I mean, I cannot wait. I cannot wait to see what you guys have done. And, you know, just the world building that lies in store, I imagine, is fast and ambitious and complex. But you also had to build... It's interesting, because with Masters of the Universe, you had to build this world, but you're building it on existing foundations, of course. And you're tweaking with things that you have grown up, you and Travis have grown up loving as kids. But how much freedom then do you have within that to play around with stuff and to... Because one of the things I loved about the movie was the fact that it's tongue-in-cheek. You know, Skeletor doesn't have a cheek, but he's a very tongue-in-cheek character.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's aware of its own pumped-up, amped-up ridiculousness at times as well.
Yeah, and those were conversations that we had to have, because you use the word ridiculous, and it is. It's always been a ridiculous concept. And I think the key for us... I think the key for any successful story in that world is that you acknowledge that it's ridiculous, but you're not embarrassed by it.
Yeah.
And there is also a sincerity to it. Like the human emotions at work beneath all the ridiculous, surface level stuff, they're real human emotions. He-Man himself, Adam, is a very sincere character. And I think that's why it works. I think Nick Gallatin is so charming in that part because he's not just some big buff warrior dude. He's like a fallible human being. Literally, he's a human being, part human. So I think that's part of it is...
Well, as you say, even the end, I mean, the Jim Brewer Skeletor character comes from a scene that is incredibly intimate and incredibly human, which is Skeletor going into Adam's memories.
That was my favorite scene to write, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I love writing Skeletor anyway. I think I am.
Whether he's a Jim Brewer or not.
I just love him. I think it's that delicate balance between Jim Brewer and camp, which I seem to straddle. So... it was always a treat writing his dialogue, and I said on the panel one of the best things that I enjoyed doing was going back through the original Filmation show and pulling all these Skeletor insults, because he's known for his insults, and I had a long list of insults and I crammed as many as I could into that script, and quite a few survived. I just love writing that character, and I loved writing that face-off between basically a narcissistic child,
yes,
and someone who is completely empathetic and works in HR. that was a dreamy little bit of a dreamy little dynamic that I got to play with.
I love the fact he's in HR. Was that inspired by HR people you've had run-ins with in the
Not
past?
Not saying. Maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Two very, very quick last things before I let you go. Are you heading back to LA now? Or are you hanging around for a little bit longer?
At 3:00.
3:00. And I'm going to get out of here. Okay. Two last things real quick. I'm fascinated by how you approach. I mean, this is a study in contrast, right? Master of the Universe and Wildwood.
Yeah.
Do you write the scripts differently? Do you get in a different headspace? Is the way you write tailored to each screenplay?
Oh, that's interesting. I do think I approach it differently, but I tend to be all in on whatever I'm working on. And in both of these projects do have pre-existing IP, pre-existing versions. So I think it's imperative when you're tackling a translation of something that already exists that you're trying to do right by the original. Otherwise, why are you making it? You're not trying to reinvent it. And so for Wildwood, it was like, what is this book about? Like, what makes it Wildwood? And I try to hang on to that. Of course, I do a few things here and there. And it's got to be a movie length.
Yeah.
Because the book's like 400 and something pages, or probably more. And it's the same thing with Masters of the Universe. There's different aspects of the IP over the years that I want to do right by.
Yeah.
So I think those guidelines are already in place when I start work.
Okay.
I know I can't stray too far. If it's a completely original project, you can go anywhere with it.
Yeah.
But it's actually quite nice to work on something where you've got these goalposts.
I'd love to read both screenplays, kind of side by side, and just compare the writing style, and just compare how you approach both of them.
Yeah.
Especially as you said, having written Wildwood some time ago. Last thing. When Travis came over for Motu, as we call it, Motu's release in the UK, did a Q&A with him, and he was talking about how he had a big Merman sequence at one point. It was a big battle on the sea between Adam and Merman, and he was like, hopefully one day we'll get to that in the sequel. I mean, are you guys hoping that might happen?
I would love this to continue. I mean, these characters, this world is very dear to me. How that looks, who knows? There are so many characters in this world, thousands, and so many of them I love. It would have been a mistake to try and put them all in that one movie, because then none of them is shining. You know, none of them has the spotlight, really. So it was a conscious decision not to include certain characters that we really wanted to include. Merman was one of them. So really, it was like our top choice list, make sure that they're in the movie, and then a few of the others fall by the wayside. Who knows? Hopefully we will get to revisit them.
Now it's on Prime Video. People are discovering the movie again. There's that sense, I think. So
yeah,
fingers crossed.
I hope so.
In the future, Merman versus He-Man. We need to see it. Brilliant. Chris, I'm going to let you and your guns get out of here.
Well, thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, man. Okay, that was Chris Butler talking about Masters of the Universe and Wildwood and being at Comic-Con and being a screenwriter who is pumped.
He is surprisingly pumped. Like, I'd met him on Zoom. I'd never met him in person before. And he came up to me and went, "Hi, it's me, Chris." And I hadn't recognized.
He shook your hand and crushed it.
Like, I was just like, like Superman, my God, he's this big guy. And of course, when you talk to someone on Zoom, it reduces them. They're just a little person on your screen. And I had no idea he was such a big fella in real life.
Yeah. I mean, he's not, that's not overstated. He's not gargantuan. He's not a Skeletor buff. No, he's not 8 feet tall. He's our height, but he has guns and he had them out. At the panel, because he was wearing that Jim Bro Skeletor t-shirt.
Yeah.
With the one with no arms that, you know, people who have guns like to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's a bit of a unit, is Chris Butler. Very excited about Wildwood. And, I'm wondering now whether Masters of the Universe will find a new audience now that it's on Prime Video.
I think it's doing well. Apparently it was number one on all streaming services the day it launched.
Okay, that's good.
So, but I was hearing that from Mattel people, so, take that how you like.
This is very true. I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it? You know, the movies that we really, really like, things like Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves, just don't do that well. Well, they do pretty well, but not enough to get a sequel generated or to get a franchise.
There should have been two sequels to that movie by now.
We should have been up to our balls in Dungeons & Dragons sequels by now, and we should have been up to our balls in Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings sequels by now as well, which is a lovely way of segueing into the Marvel panel. Dan, you're a professional, so you weren't able to get into Hall H or any of the other rooms to see stuff.
They don't let professionals in there.
They don't let professionals. Well, no, you'd have to queue with riffraff, you see. Whereas, I'm very, very lucky. I realized this and I was able to be whisked in through a special side entrance and then taken to reserve seating near the stage, but not right by the stage.
Okay. How was it, Chris? What was the energy in the room like?
The energy in the room, I mean, I always likened to Beatlemania, that energy. And I'm not always in that room, and certainly I haven't been in there for 9 years because of pandemics and other things. But on the few occasions when I have been there, because most of the time I'm over here at the Hilton Bayfront at the press line waiting for the press line to begin. And then over the years I realized, well, the press line can't begin until the panel's over because everyone's there.
So I have been there a few times.
I know. Honestly, sitting there sometimes waiting for like an hour, hour and a half, and you go, well, of course they can't be here because they're there. Okay. Anyway, so I have seen amazing things at Hall H. I wasn't there obviously for Downey being revealed as Doctor Doom 2 years ago, but I have felt sometimes just the hair standing up in the back of my neck, goosebumps breaking out in my flesh whenever they've announced something incredible or they've dropped footage from something like, Age of Ultron or things like that, or when Tom Hiddleston appeared as Loki, little things like that. Today I think was pretty much up there, which is interesting because, obviously, Doomsday is a bit more of an unknown quantity than I'd say Infinity War or Endgame were. It doesn't have the same benefit of a smash hit run-up. You know, Marvel have faltered a little bit over the last few years. You know, not everything is a $800 million grossing behemoth anymore. Mm. Last year, they released three films, two of which, one of which in particular, Thunderbolts, was excellent.
I love that. Yeah,
Fantastic Four was solid to very good.
I love that too.
I enjoy Brave New World. I realize now in hindsight I'm the only one who did, but it's fine. But none of those ripped up the joint in terms of the box office, and so they're not coming into this with a position of strength or a position of of infallibility like I think they maybe once had.
It doesn't feel like it has the same momentum behind it that Infinity War did. Which is, I'm still excited about it. I'm hugely excited about it. And most people I know who are into the MCU are also excited. It's not like we're not excited.
Yeah.
But just in terms of that kind of that bigger, broader audience, is there the same anticipation?
I don't know.
I don't think there is.
Well, something like a Deadpool and Wolverine, because we were saying the same things. You know, people were beginning to sound almost a death knell that the good ship Marvel had taken on some water below the waterline. It was beginning to sink a little bit. It would never sink, but certainly would, you know, maybe engage a couple of the lifeboats. And, you know, I just feel like that, you know, the kind of death knell we were sounding, or some people were sounding, was maybe a little bit premature.
Mm.
You know, Deadpool and Wolverine made 1.4 billion, something like that, coming off a pretty bad year in 2023.
Yeah.
You know, with the Marvels not doing well and Quantumania not doing well. So, you know, I think that the appetite is still there. The excitement is still there. The trailer, from what I understand, you know, though, you know, how much of this you take with a pinch of salt, I don't know.
Mm.
But the trailer, from what I understand, did record-breaking numbers.
Mm. That's true.
So there might be still the excitement for this movie, and also the fact that, you know, Brand New Day is dropping in a few days' time. Spider-Man Brand New Day is dropping in a few days' time. Maybe once again, maybe the opposite is true of what happened with Infinity War and Endgame, which was able to ride that wave, and the rising tide lifted all boats.
Hmm.
So it was able to, the momentum of Infinity War and Endgame was able to get things like Captain Marvel to a billion, was able to get things like Ant-Man and the Wasp to whatever it did, 600 million, was able to get Thor Ragnarok to 800 million, all that sort of stuff. So people were just like, we want more of this. We're excited. We're rolling on a wave here. This is the opposite tact. This is, you're getting very little MCU. You're getting three films. We're introducing the Fantastic Four, but we're not aligning them with Doctor Doom. The footage made clear that the Fantastic Four, Pedro Pascal, and Vanessa Kirby's Sue Storm know Doctor Doom.
Yeah.
They're old friends with Doctor Doom.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have minded that being established in that movie, but hey, that's okay. And now you're only getting one Marvel movie before Doomsday. And maybe they're creating that appetite through withholding. I think that's maybe something that's happening. I don't know.
Treat them mean to keep them keen.
I'm not sure I would, but I can see that.
That's kind of the stress. It's on the wall in the Marvel marketing strategy.
It might be part of Doctor Doom's ethos, is what I can say. But I'll go talk it through real quick. There were other panels to talk about, and I was at a few other panels this year, but I was very much a one-man band this year at Comic-Con, so I was pretty much stretched from pillar to post. So I wasn't doing as much filming as I would like normally. You know, when we did the 50 blog episodes with Sam Toy, that's all I would be doing, pretty much going from places to places, doing interviews, doing comedy bits, well, so-called comedy bits.
50 blog episode man.
50 blog episode man,
yeah.
RIP. Yeah. You know, the 50 blog episode man cinematic universe has not yet been announced. Mm. Yeah, and then...
In Doomsday?
He is in Doomsday, yes. If you just see him right behind the back going, oh, excuse me, Dr. Doom. What was 50 blog episode man's voice? It was more like Matt Berry. I'm Matt Berry.
Yeah, very Matt Berry.
Yeah, very Matt Berry. Anyway, alarmingly so, Matt Berry. In fact, at the time I was going, not many people know Matt Berry, so I can do his voice and get away with it. Now I'd be like, why are you doing a shit Matt Berry? Anyway, and then obviously there were other people coming out to Comic-Con and doing other things and going to panels and doing all sorts of stuff over the years when we had a bigger presence at Comic-Con. The last year we came was 2017, where we had our own studio, we had our own suite, and we did photo shoots and video interviews and all sorts of stuff. It was amazing. And then the pandemic happened and some various other reasons, and we didn't come back since then, except for this year when it was a fairly late decision to send me out here, which is why I was one man banding it.
Yeah.
So thank you for helping me out with the Doomsday Marvel press line, by the way.
That's all right.
Very, very much appreciated.
You're a very capable one man band.
Well, thank you. But
yeah, you can do the harmonica and the ankle cymbals.
But not at the same time. Yeah. That's the problem. And I'm really, really, really fucking exhausted, which is why I'm rambling and just saying nonsense. But I went to a lot of other panels and I went to a lot of stuff, and I was on the floor and I spoke to really, really cool people and I had a really, really great time.
Yeah.
But if I'm completely honest, the only reason I was here was for the Marvel panel and was
surprised
for
me,
Avengers Doomsday. Well, not just me being a MCU fan, and not just me being, you know, Kevin Feige's brother from another mother or whatever it is. I was sent to do this essentially as well. And it's important to Empire as a brand that we covered this panel and we were actually there in the room and got to experience it. I think
if I could have gone to one, yeah, if I could have gone to one panel, that's the one I would have gone to.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and most people would say that.
Let's take today, for example. So I was in Hall H most of the day and I had a decent time. I had a nice time.
Mm.
But nothing made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up until Marvel. So I was at a Star Trek. Okay, let me walk that back a second, because there was something really, really lovely in the Star Trek at 60 panel. So it started off with the Star Trek Universe panel, which was split into two parts. One was a celebration of Star Trek at 60 that had a representative from pretty much every televisual iteration of Star Trek on this panel. So George Takei was there, which was amazing. Michael Dorn was there. Robert Picardo was there. Michelle Hurd was there. Christina Chong was there. Anson Mount wasn't on that one. And then they had a Strange New Worlds panel as well. Yeah. And seeing George Takei being brought out onto stage in a wheelchair, because he's now, obviously quite old, but his mind is still so sharp and his voice is still so powerful. Genuinely, I got really emotional about it. There was a big standing ovation for him. The second one I saw at this year's Comic-Con, because Rick Moranis was part of the Spaceballs panel in Hall H. Friday. And that was wonderful as well, because he hasn't done anything in years. He's been essentially retired.
Yeah, 30 years.
For 30 years.
Yeah.
He's done some live, some voice over stuff and the odd cameo in some TV movies and a Ryan Reynolds mobile, I think, or Ryan Reynolds advert, certainly a couple of years ago. But otherwise, he hadn't done anything. And then he was there for the Spaceballs, the new one panel. By the way, that looks really genuinely funny and quite cinematic well. So I'm excited.
And they were combing the crowd. The big comb appeared, didn't it?
They were doing the big comb. Yeah. They were looking for Rick Moranis because the gag was he was so reclusive they'd lost him on the way to the stage. And then, of course, there he was sitting in the audience, his dark helmet. And then he comes to the stage and it's just this grand standing ovation for this comedy legend. And the Spaceballs panel was great. I really enjoyed being there. And it was a lovely panel as well for Pan's Labyrinth at 20 with Guillermo del Toro and Guillermo del Faro and Ivana Baquero, who is the young actress from it now. She's now 32, I think.
Oh, man.
And Doug Jones, of course, played the Pale Man and the Fawn.
Who is also now 32.
He is now also 32 years old. He was on the Star Trek at 60 panel
by the way,
because he's in Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah.
And it was a lovely moment just when George Takei came out. It was another standing ovation. And Michelle Hurd kind of became emotional as well, talking about how much it meant to her, you know, watching the original series and watching Nichelle Nichols as Uhura and then being sat next to Sulu. And she began to break down in, you know, a little bit, not like full-blown, squirting a few Miller's Crossing tears, but, you know, certainly she was emotional about it. And that made me emotional as well. Mm. So that was a lovely, lovely panel as well. But then the Apple TV panel was fine. You know, Matchbox the movie, which seems to have more of a reason for existing than I had assumed.
So you were telling me earlier, I was disappointed to hear that's not John Cena being turned into a micro Cena and driving around in toy cars.
No.
That's not that.
I thought that's what it was going to be, but it's not. It appears to be some sort of Fast and Furious-y thing, like a caper thing with these five childhood friends who grew up playing Matchbox toys. That's the conceit. That's the way into it. Otherwise, I don't think that there's a really great connection between Matchbox and what happens in the movie. I actually quite like that. It's quite elegant. As kids, we loved playing with Matchbox toys. Then we grew up a bit like It, and some of us stayed in touch, but this guy, John Cena, went off and became a spy. And now he's come back into our lives, and we get caught up in his spy shenanigans, and there's lots of car chases and motorbike chases and vehicle chases. And because we were able to play with Matchbox toys as kids, we're able to kind of go, not like superpowers, but we're going, hey, we're driving we're just going to do a stunt with this car, just like we did with Matchbox toys when we were kids. I mean, now it's a tank. It's that kind of thing. So it seemed to have a nice knowing quality to it. I'm as skeptical about this movie as you are, Dan, but the footage was funny.
Okay.
The panel was very funny.
Okay.
John Cena was on good form. He drank an entire bottle of water in one gulp.
Why?
Because he was just on it, man. He came in hot. What can I say? He came in hot.
But was it a dare? Did someone say, I bet you can't drink that in one go?
No, he just went, he was talking because he was on very, very performing. He was really performing. He was playing to the crowd, and he went, "Now I'm going to drink this water in one go," and he just did it, and everyone was like, "Oh my God, that's the greatest thing I've ever seen."
I mean, I'm a big John Cena fan.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that would impress me.
Yeah, that don't impress me much. All right, Shania. Anyway, so that was fine. John Francis Daly and Jonathan Goldstein came out, and they brought a clip from May Day.
Big fan of those guys.
May Day, my understanding is it's very good, and I'm very much looking forward to it. And certainly the clip, which had Ryan Reynolds and Kenneth Branagh trying to get out of a gnarly situation, was very, very funny and inventive and cinematic. All the things you expect from these guys. More of a Game Night vibe than a Dungeons & Dragons vibe.
Oh, well, I mean, I love Game Night. I mean,
Game Night, in my opinion, the greatest comedy of the last... I'm going to backdate this so I don't include Anchorman. The last 20 years.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. Unless, although we had this discussion recently, unless you count Dungeons & Dragons as a comedy. Like, because obviously it is a comedy, but it's more than a comedy. Whereas I suppose Game Night is just operating almost purely within that genre.
No, I accept that Dungeons & Dragons is a comedy. I think Game Night is a superior comedy.
Ooh. Okay.
Fight? Want to fight?
Yeah, no. I'm considering it.
Okay.
I'm not... I think... I will accept...
This isn't fighting music, by the way.
This is loving music. this is definitely...
We'll get to that. Anyway, so that panel was okay, and it had, like... There was more stuff for Apple TV shows, okay, like Dark Matter and Silo and Widower's Bay, which I thought might have been a season two kind of tease, but was actually kind of a victory lap for Widower's Bay.
Yeah, because so, Widower's Bay's out there, and yeah. Silo's like, what, 4 episodes in now?
Precisely. And to be honest, yeah. I kind of had a Sophie's Choice today. Actually, I'd say presented within that film.
Yeah.
Because I had a choice between going to the Apple TV panel or the Reacher panel, and I thought that Apple TV might be more salient for our listeners and for our readers, and so I went to that, and I kind of, it was a bit of a busted flush just from my point of view in terms of, like, is there much here for people to glom onto, because people want to go to these things to come out with great big chunks of news. And I didn't go to the Reacher panel, and I had great big chunks of news. So they announced that the 5th season of Reacher is going to be based on Make Me, which is book 20, and is one of my favorite books. They're weirdly enough, the last 3 seasons of Reacher have been hitting my favorite Reacher books. So Persuader, and then Gone Tomorrow, which is a new season that's about to start, and now Make Me, which is effectively, I think, one of the last Lee Child solo books, and I'm very, very excited about that. But he also announced there's going to be a Neagley book, which is the kind of his, not sidekick, but his loyal friend, played by Maria Sten in those shows. Mm. Alan Ritchson, of course. Sorry, Jack Reacher is Alan Ritchson. And she's now getting her own book, her first book. Right. Which will be co-written by Lee Child and another author as well. So, okay. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so I probably would rather have gone to that panel. But anyway...
I would have made the same choice.
Yeah, that's what I tell myself. That's what keeps me sleeping at night. But the whole H Marvel Studios panel, I was not going to miss for the world. And I'm so, so glad I did. So I'm going to run through very quickly the highlights. So it started off with Kevin Feige. It started off with this incredible recap reel of the MCU. That was, again, genuinely goosebumps inducing. And featuring not just MCU characters, but the X-Men, you know, from the Fox movies and whatnot, which was great. Feige comes out on stage and then does a bit of business announcing the Ghost Rider movie in 2028.
Yeah.
Which seemed to have been willed into being over the years by Ryan Gosling, who has been talking about this. Now,
he drove it.
Do you drive a bike? He wrote it. The interesting thing about this, because people I know will immediately be going, yeah, hang on, Chris, but didn't Feige stand on that stage, what, 8-9 years ago, and announce Inhumans as part of Phase 3 or 4, and that never got made? And didn't he stand on that stage about 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, with Mahershala Ali and announced Blade?
Yeah.
And we're still waiting for that movie to be made?
Yeah.
Yes is the answer to both of those, but this Ghost Rider has a release date. So it's coming in 2028, and it has a director, Sean Levy, which is not, the Blade movie had directors, but it never really got to that point.
Okay.
So that was exciting. So he announced that. He talked about, what else did he talk about at that point? Then it was very much, I think, onto Doomsday, pretty much. I don't think they talked about anything else.
Yes, they did.
What did they do? What?
Black Panther.
And that's at the end, though.
Oh, okay.
So then they talked about Doomsday, and he brought on the Russos, Joe Anthony Russo, the directors of that movie. And then they did something that I believe has never been done before. They did a little bit of business going, oh, I can't see anyone at the back. Oh my God, what's it like being at the back? And you can't see us, we're just ants here. Well, what if we turned the back of the arena into the front of the arena? And then they went, and the curtains came back, and suddenly there were two massive stages at the back of the arena, containing the X-Men, the new Avengers, and Sam Wilson's Avengers from this movie, at least the ones who were here. Because some people like Chris Hemsworth, he's down in Australia filming Extraction 3, so he wasn't here. But it was still an amazing
lineup. Couldn't be bothered.
Couldn't be arsed, mate.
Couldn't be bothered.
Nor could Sam Hargrave, who was directing it, so he couldn't be here for the Matchbox panel. So, honestly.
I mean, really.
Yeah, what the fuck are you doing?
Just get on the Bifrost.
Just because you made Heimdall.
Yeah.
He'll sort it out. Oh, no, he's dead. Oh, dear. Oh. Anyway, so then they all came on stage, and Downey was there, and Downey gave people a little taste of his Doom accent. There were loads of people dressed in the audience, dressed as Doom in the audience. But that's not really why we were here.
Hmm.
We were here to see some footage from Avengers Doomsday, and we got it. We got some footage from Avengers Doomsday. And Dan, I have to say, I could not be more in the tank for this movie. I realize that, I accept that. But it did look really fucking good.
Okay.
And it has, I mean, I've got notes written down somewhere. I can't look at them right now because we're doing this. But it has a voiceover from Vanessa Kirby's Sue Storm describing to people what the Victor Von Doom she knew was like.
Right.
And over it, you see footage of a lot of the characters in this movie looking quite distraught and quite distressed. And she was saying, you know, the Victor Von Doom I knew was kind, the Victor Von Doom I knew was wise, but then he trundled a trolley past and and made some noise. But then he lost everything, his wife and kid. And then I knew he was hurting, but I didn't know he was broken. And then so we get then some shots of Doom in Downey in his Doom getup, which looks incredible. And we have there's a couple of shots in there of some sort of desolation, like somewhere has been utterly destroyed.
Mm.
And Pedro Pascal as Reed Richards is grabbing Doom and going, "Did you do this, Victor? Did you do this?" And then we get a little bit more of a shot of, and you know what? I'm going to take a look at this. There's a really nice line of dialogue. And I want to take a look at my notes real quick here.
Okay. We've got whole music going on in the background anyway. So, you know.
Dan, talk while I'm getting my laptop out.
Okay. Well, I don't want to jump the gun with your nose, but one of the things that's excited me, whether this is a revelation that I'm late to or whether this is a new one, is that they've connected Doom with the Sentinels.
Yes.
Which, you know, from the fanboy perspective is kind of like, okay.
That
works.
I've written this down.
Yeah.
I've written this down.
So I wondered why there's a big Sentinel down on the floor in the main bit. And I kind of thought, oh, okay, why, you know, because there's a display, an Avengers Doomsday display on the main floor that I went and checked out.
There is.
And I thought, well, why is there a Sentinel? That's quite surprising. And then I learned.
You learned?
That Doom's made the Sentinels?
No, he doesn't make the Sentinels.
Or he's connected him. They connected him to. Okay. Yeah. Well,
if you let me fucking explain.
Well, you asked me
finished?
I was just.
Jesus Christ.
While you got your thing out and looked at the stuff.
All right. So Doom, the footage stars Doom's sitting on a throne. Vanessa Kirby says he was always the smartest guy in the room. He used to be different. He used to be kind. He used to be caring. Then I've written Magneto and Gambit and Cap. I don't think she says that.
I don't think she says Magneto and Gambit and Cap.
So what happened with Doom then? He basically, did he get radicalized by social media? Was that it? Did he spend too long on X? Is that what happened?
He did.
Yeah.
And then everything he loved was taken from him, as Twitter was taken from me.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he was lost, and I did not realize that he was broken. And then we have a shot of Doom looking menacing, and then Pedro Pascal going, Victor, did you do this? And then we hear Downey as Doom going, all of you have lived stolen lives. Now you must give them back. And then there's another bit where Pedro Pascal is going, answer me, Victor, did you do this? And the answer clearly is yes, that this Doom is very, very powerful. He's into magic, he's into science, he's a formidable foe, and he's done something horrible to some place. What that place is, I do not know. What that horrible thing is, I do not know.
But maybe the Sentinels were involved.
Dan, I'm getting to the fucking Sentinels. Jesus. Then we have an extended look at the Thor versus Doom face-off from the trailer, which has a great line from Chris Hemsworth's Thor before he goes to attack Doom. He says, in that kind of mostly English but slightly Australian Thor that he's becoming more and more as Hemsworth plays a role. He goes, I'll swear you will beg for hell long before I grant it. Ooh. And then he swings a Stormbreaker, and then Doom stops him with just two fingers. And then Thor's like, oh, fuck. And he gets propelled back with an energy beam. By the way, if you don't want to know what's happening in this footage, stop listening. And then Doom rises up after having smited or smote Thor.
Smitten.
Smitten. And he says, hell answers to me. And then, Dan, that's when he does some magical conjuring shit and raises from behind him an army of Sentinels.
Of Sentinels?
Yes.
Awesome.
And I'm beginning to see why in the trailer Thor is a little bit like, this guy's quite powerful and we may be fucked. It's a paraphrase. But that was the footage. And then that's all they showed from Doomsday. And it was short, but it was sweet. And it gives you a real idea of Downey. And there is not, for me anyway, an iota of Tony Stark in this performance. Not in the voice, not in the mannerisms, not in the way he carries himself. And we've had this discussion on the podcast, and I'm probably going to be proven wrong on December 18th. But I don't think it's going to be revealed that he's Tony Stark gone wrong. I don't think that's going to happen.
It just seems too obvious. It seems like, okay, there is an element of like, why cast him as this role? There's many other people that probably be very good at it, what have you. So there must be a reason for it. But also at the same time, okay, there must be a reason for it. But that's just, you've seeded something really obvious. In terms of like audience expectation, it's just too like, it's too in front of you. It's too right there in front of you that to think that they would do that. And also they've double casted people in the MCU before.
They have.
I mean, Gemma Chan's played two people.
Yeah.
I mean,
Lauren Haddock.
Yeah.
Mahershala Ali would have been.
Yes.
He may still well be. Technically, he has been in the MCU as Blade, so yeah, there's another one.
Yeah, and also kind of Josh Brolin, but not really, if you see what I mean, because he's Cable and Thanos.
Yeah.
And I know, obviously, he wasn't MCU
and
at
Ryan
that
Reynolds.
Time. And Ryan Reynolds, of course, yeah.
You know, and Chris Evans, and
if you're counting things that have been been brought into the MCU multiversally, then a lot of people have played more than one role within this. So why shouldn't
Downey? I just don't see it. The real test for me will be whether we see his face.
Mm.
And, and what that face will look like, because Doom obviously traditionally doesn't reveal his face, doesn't take the helmet off, doesn't take the mask off. And you would argue that, you're paying Robert Downey Jr. quite a lot of money. We'd like to see the old money maker at some point. But I think he's committed to this role.
Yeah.
And I think it might be like a Carl Urban in Dread type thing where he's just like, you know what? I'm not going to do that. And then if he does take the mask off, does he look like Tony Stark? And if he looks like Tony Stark, does he look like Tony Stark enough that it means something to the people in the movie to whom Tony Stark meant something?
Yeah.
Because the movie is not liberally festooned with people who worked closely with Tony Stark. There is... I mean, obviously, Tony Stark was a very famous guy in this world, but Anthony Mackie, Paul Rudd, maybe Chris Evans, obviously, and Hemsworth, obviously. Yes. But by and large, these are new characters who would not have interacted with Tony Stark and who would not have had the emotional impact. Like if Doom takes off his mask and looks like Tony Stark, I don't think it means a lot to Shang-Chi. I don't think it means a lot to Gambit. It doesn't mean a lot to Gambit. It doesn't mean a lot to Pedro Pascal, because Tony Stark wouldn't even have been born in his world had there been a Tony Stark in his reality. So I don't think they're going to go down that route. I really don't.
I think you're right. I think that's really interesting, you know, the idea he's just going to work with the mask and it's that's what it's going to be, you know. But then again.
Listen, I mean,
It's still there, isn't it? But then, you know, maybe it's like a mask beneath a mask. Maybe there's prosthetics or they've done something that's going to so change his appearance.
Yeah. The voice is different.
Yeah.
The mannerisms are different. The one thing I'm slightly concerned about with Doom, and we'll wrap up in a second. The one thing I'm concerned about with Doom is that Tony Stark was so winning and had such a forceful personality that, you know, pretty soon he obviously started the MCU, but, you know, he was, to all intents and purposes, the anchor being of the MCU.
Yeah.
And when he died, his loss was keenly felt. And a lot of that was Downey. You know, that line between Downey and Stark is indistinguishable at times. And is Von Doom going to have the same impact? Is he going to have the same killer dialogue? Is he going to have the same charisma that Tony Stark had? Maybe it's a different type of charisma.
I think it will be different. I mean, okay, so I would say, if you wanted to feel a bit, you know, reassured about that, I mean, think about what Downey was like in Oppenheimer, for example.
For which he won an Academy Award.
Which was very different performance from him, very different style, sort of very different kind of a presence, but really impactful, you know, and really, you know, I mean, obviously Cillian Murphy held that film together, but, you know, he was the perfect nemesis for Cillian Murphy's Oppenheimer. And I just think he's got that in him to do that. And I think, yeah, sure, I think we can have a kind of like Oppenheimer / Tony Stark kind of combo going on with Von Doom. So, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So that was the footage. Then all the cast left. Then Feige came back on stage and said, one more thing. We've got one more movie to announce. And flashed up on screen. He said, you know, we'll be working with a lot of great filmmakers. Some of them go off and they win Oscars, but then they want to come back and they want to make another movie. So, Ryan Coogler. And they announced Black Panther 3 and they gave it a release date of December 15th, 2028. And Coogler seemed to intimate that it's going to be shot in IMAX.
Oh, wow.
Which is great. And then they have one more bit of casting to announce. They brought out Letitia Wright and Winston Duke, who had been on stage for the big Doomsday thing as well. Letitia Wright, of course, playing Shuri, and Winston Duke is M'Baku, the new King of Wakanda. Shuri, of course, the current Black Panther. We know there's going to be a lot of upheaval in Doomsday and Secret Wars. There's going to be lots of that the universe is going to be made anew again in the wake of that. So it's interesting that they announced, and this is Ryan Coogler's actual words, the new Black Panther. So at the end of Black Panther Wakanda Forever, T'Challa's son was introduced, but a young kid. And now in this movie, he's all grown up. Now, and he's going to be played by, you'll know this if you've been listening to this, if you've been keeping your ear to the ground, the wonderful David Johnson.
Yeah,
and I was brilliant. so happy to see that. He came out on the stage and he was very, very humble and decent, I think, in that David Johnson way that I think is so recognizable. There's something innately, I think, kind about David Johnson, which is not to say he can't play dickheads. He can, and he has.
Yeah.
But in my dealings with him and certainly my relationship with the characters he's played on screen, there's a decency and a warmth in him, which is very Chadwick Boseman. And I think makes him a great choice for this. And also, quite frankly, he's a phenomenal fucking actor.
He's brilliant. As Boseman was, you know.
As Boseman was.
Yeah.
I'm so happy about this.
There's so much to get into with, you know, the release schedules and what they're doing. Ghost Rider, which is brand new, but Black Panther, but there's a grown-up new Black Panther. So what does that mean for Shuri? Where is that? What is that going to leave her at the end of Secret Wars? Is there going to be some timey-wimey shit? Are we pulling people from different multiverses together and to form a new MCU? You know, it's interesting that they haven't announced. Feige hinted in my interview with him that there's going to be more things announced for 2028. But, you know, where are we with things like Spider-Man at the end of Secret Wars, when the dust has settled? Where are we? Is Downey, for example, a two and done as Doom?
Yeah.
Is he going to do Doomsday and Secret Wars and then that's him? Is he done? Or is Doom going to stick around in the MCU? You know, where's Spider-Man? Where's Thor? What's going to happen to Chris Evans' cap now that he's back? Anthony Mackie, what, you know, the new Avengers, Shang-Chi, all these characters, are they going to be left on the board? You know, it's an exciting time, Dan.
Yeah,
it's an exciting time.
I know. And you didn't even mention Loki.
Yeah, he was on the footage. Hiddleston wasn't there. I thought Hiddleston was going to be there. I'll be honest. But he was not there. I'm fascinated to see how Loki fits into
again, because where he ended up at the end of Loki seemed pretty much definitive. Like, okay, that's Loki done with. They're finished with that character.
Well, interestingly, you just reminded me of something in this footage. That line that Doom said about, you are living stolen lives.
Yeah.
There was a shot of Loki over that. And this Loki is living a stolen life.
Indeed. Yeah, he's the variant.
Yeah. So, is Doom coming to different planets, to different realities, to different universes? There's some sort of incursion business going on. I'm pretty sure that's the case. I don't know. Anyway,
I think is his mission to tidy up the timelines in a kind of the way the TVA was supposed to
possibly
didn't or possibly. Something. I don't know.
I think there's something more to it as well. But you know, we'll find out what he's up to soon enough. December 18th. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too.
I'm genuinely excited. It looks epic. And it looks great.
And also, just so quite simply, Doctor Doom was always one of the coolest villains in the comic books. And and the movies never got him right up until this point.
No, they never did. Julian McMahon, RIP, and Toby Kebbell. Yeah, he just wasn't given a chance in that movie. And I can see why they didn't do Doctor Doom in the Fantastic Four First Steps, because they've done that and they always want to avoid stuff. Then again, they did Galactus and Silver Surfer again, but with different tweaks, I guess.
Better,
in fairness.
Yeah.
But I still would have liked to have seen a Downey thing, but I guess, you know, you're not going to be able to do that because that's another $30 million on the budget or something, you know, so who knows. Going to round this up very, very quickly, I want to talk about very, very quickly one last panel I went to, which was for Adam Wingard's Onslaught. Which
awesome.
Is not the guest too, but also is not the guest too, because it's also about mad, unkillable super soldiers. It takes place in the same town as the guest, and the soldiers seem to come from the same program that Dan Stevens, David did in The Guest, which is, if you've never seen The Guest, 2014, Adam Wingard, incredible black comic, blackly comedic action horror thriller. It turned Dan Stevens into the Empire podcast's spirit animal for quite some time.
He had to beat off a lot of American men for that role.
And for this, he's in this movie. And when he was announced as being in this movie, that's what made me think it's The Guest too, but he's not. He's playing a completely different character. He's playing some sort of wizened, maniacal old Nazi who's responsible for the program and who likes to lick feet. But it looks absolutely insane. The panel was so much fun, hosted by Kevin Smith, who is able to give people on panels shit and get away with it in a way that nobody else can. Because he ribs them very, very affectionately. Wingard was great value. Adria Arjona, who's the lead of this movie, looks incredible and was very, very much, you know, very a lot of fun. Dan Stevens was having a lot of fun. Rebecca Hall, Drew Starkey. Film looks fucking amazing. It's out on September 5th in the US. It doesn't have a release date over here yet, Dan. I say over here, we're in the States now, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. That's concerning.
It's downright fucking annoying, is what it is.
Yeah. So basically, it hasn't been. No one's picked it up for distribution.
No, it's been picked up. They just haven't. They haven't. They just haven't given it a release date yet. And I want my Onslaught, and I want it now.
Okay. Oh well, you just have to do some dodgy stuff with a VPN. No.
Don't do that. And winners don't use drugs. Finally, how was your Comic-Con? Did you walk the floor? Did you enjoy the floor?
Yeah.
And what are you, you know, this was your first time being here. It was my first time in 9 years. I genuinely get such a kick out of being here. And it's not just the fact that we get to see these incredible panels, we get to talk to these people for sometimes 3 minutes, which is incredible. But I genuinely love that everyone here is here for the same reason. And they're here to celebrate geek culture, and they're here to celebrate, no matter what it is, your, you know, board games in your case.
Yeah.
Tabletop gaming, just art in general, comic books, films, television, manga, games, whatever your choice of poison. I can count on maybe the fingers of two fingers over the years. The times I've had aggro with someone here, the times where I've maybe had a, you know, a run into a dickhead.
Yeah.
Tell them your burger story then.
My what? Sorry?
Tell them the burger story. Because I think it illustrates just what an amazing place Comic-Con is, and what the people who come to Comic-Con are just wonderful, wonderful people.
Yeah, yeah. So we were getting a quick burger here at the Hilton, and I got to the front, and my credit card, you know, I had to, it wasn't accepted with a quick swipe, and I had to do the thing where you insert it and do the PIN code. And I was just basically having a craft moment, as they say.
A what moment?
Craft. Can't remember a fucking thing.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
Cool. I like that.
I was having my craft moment, and I forgot the PIN number, but you know, and I was just like, what is it? And then this nice person just behind, she just leaned in and went, "Don't worry, I got this, babe." And then tapped her card on the thing.
Yeah.
And I was so flabbergasted by this random act of kindness from a stranger that I don't think I even said thank you. I just went, "Oh, what? You sure? What? Hey?"
And then she was gone. She was gone.
She was just like, "My work here is done." And wafted
she,
out.
She yelled back over her shoulder, because neither of us were quite sure what had happened.
Yeah.
Because the lady behind the desk thought your card had started working.
Yeah, she just said, "Oh, it's gone through now." And I'm like, "That wasn't me."
But she had paid for it, and she shouted over her shoulder, "Don't worry about it, just do a squiggle for the signature," because in the States, it's so backward here, they actually still get you to sign stuff.
Yeah.
So fucking weird.
Yeah.
And add a $5 tip. She said that. Did you hear that?
Did
and
she?
I bet you didn't.
I didn't.
No, there you go.
I didn't, because
she said add a $5 tip and just do a squiggle.
I didn't even hear that, because I was just like,
you were so,
I was just in this moment of like, you know,
you were genuinely beating yourself up about not having said thank
you. I felt really bad about not saying thank you.
You went full Opus Day in your hotel room later on that night.
I really hope
she's
that person, if she's listening to this, thank you from the bottom of my heart. That was a random act of kindness, and I intend to pay it forward in some way.
Yes, if you were the red-headed lady who paid for a random stranger's burger because he was faffing around with a credit card.
And called me babe, made me feel good about
myself. She was with a man.
No,
it wasn't a sexual component here.
It was just a nice thing.
If you are that lady, and you disappeared in the distance in the Hilton Bayfront, by the way, those $13 burgers have kept me going the last couple of days. Oh my God, I eat so badly out here. It's not just that I don't eat. And then when I do eat, it's terrible. Yeah. Except it's not terrible, because those burgers are really nice.
Yeah.
Hilton Bayfront does burgers.
Yeah. I had the Impossible Burger, by the way, which was actually very nice.
I've never had one. I reject their existence. Anyway, but it was amazing. And I just think that shows what people are like at Comic-Con. Yeah. There is such a wellspring of kindness here. Everyone's in the same boat. I love the people come out here, and they are utterly themselves.
Yeah.
I there are things about Comic-Con I'm not great on. There are things I don't like. I think there's an over-officiousness. It's overly regimented and regulated.
Mm.
But when you get past that, the people are just terrific. And I felt this since day one. You know, the sense of belonging that people feel when
it's a tribe.
People who may but people who just, you know, maybe don't belong in their everyday lives, or they struggle in their everyday lives, and they can come here and they can dress up as their favorite character, and they put such heart and soul into this stuff, and they look incredible, and everyone is just so warm and friendly, and I fucking love this place. I don't want it to be 9 years before I come back.
Yeah, I find this. I do a lot of board game conventions, you know, the UK Games Expo
and Essen Spiel,
and it's the same vibe. You know, it's the nerd tribe coming together and just like loving, you know, doing this thing they love together, and it's always really uplifting. It's a genuinely uplifting experience. And yeah, I just kind of like, I was walking the halls, you know, the halls today, and getting that same. And actually, I found the board game area of Comic-Con.
Great.
Because I thought that was my mission I set myself. I had to find the board game area. It's on the mezzanine.
I don't know where the mezzanine is.
Most people don't know what or where that is. So I thought, I'm going to find the damn mezzanine. And I found it, and I found the rooms. And it's just like, it's just a tiny little, almost like a little boutique area of the con, where the board game loving people are. And I went in there and I found it, and I met some guys who had were there with their little independent card game called Herdvana, about creating little herds of animals. And I sat down with them for 30 minutes and I played a little card game with them. And I just saw it just felt for a few moments like I was at a board game convention. And then I went back into the, you know, the big madness of everything else. Yeah, so just to say, just for anyone who's into board games, come to Comic-Con 2, there is an area for you as well. It's been really cool. But, you know, obviously the best thing was being here as talent and being on a panel. Getting to look down on you, Chris Hewitt, from a stage at Comic-Con, looking down at you was the best moment.
They wouldn't let me ask a question.
No, but I did wave to you.
You did.
I did wave.
I did. I was very supportive. I was very supportive.
You were. You were there cheering.
I was.
Leading the cheers.
I'm a good hype man. What can I say?
Yeah.
All right. That's pretty much it. This has been just a wonderful, wonderful experience to be back at Comic-Con. I've loved pretty much every second of it, with the possible exception of the Apple TV panel. That's neither here nor there. And, you know, it's just great to be back. And I don't want it to be 9 years before the next one. And in fact, next year, I'd love to come back. And if anyone from Comic-Con is listening to this, if anyone knows how to make this happen, it's the 15th anniversary of the podcast next year. I am...
The 50th?
The 50th. It feels like 50th. 15th, you cloth-eared lug. I've gone full Clouseau. You lunk.
That's my dog.
Yeah. And yes. And I would love to come back here and do a panel / live show with James and Helen next year. So if anyone from Comic-Con is listening to this, podcasts are now a big thing out here as well. Let us know if there's a way we can make that happen. Speaking of podcasts, I bumped into Mallory Rubin and Joanna Robinson from the House of R.
Oh, cool.
And they were lovely. And so shout out to them as well. Bumped into Anthony Breshnikin, bumped into Josh Horowitz. Some lovely, lovely people. And so it's good to be back. It's great to be the king. It's good to be back. And we'd love to come back next year and do something bigger with the Empire Podcast to celebrate our 15th anniversary, because we're doing a kind of tour, which I haven't fully announced yet because not all the pieces are in place. But that is what is going to happen next year, Dan.
Amazing.
Maybe you can come on one of the shows.
Maybe I can. We'll have to just discuss my my rider. But
Your ghost rider?
Yeah.
2028, Sean Levy, Ryan Gosling, Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Nick Cage?
Yeah. Well, maybe in the multiverse.
Yeah.
Maybe in the multiverse. Anyway, on that note, that is definitely it. Dan and I have got to go get some food. And maybe a traditional GR Daily's ice cream if we have enough time.
Yeah, we'll see.
Don't think we do.
We'll see. Maybe.
We shall see.
You got something to do.
I've got something,
Chris,
to do. I've got to speak to a good man.
The day is far from over from you.
The day is far from over from me. And in fact, it starts again at 6 a.m. with another interview. So that's a lot of fun.
And I've got to get up to go kayaking.
You do. You do genuinely what you're doing.
Yes.
Live long and prosper, Dan. Yeah. Live long and prosper. And thank you so much for listening to this this Comic-Con podcast. How long is it? Fuck me. It's an hour long. Anyway.
Oh, there we are. That was the... Just a half an hour, Chris says. Just half an hour. Chris says, double it.
Whenever I say tight to 20, triple it. Thanks, Dan.
Cheers, Chris.
And thank you for listening. See you next time. And in fact, the regular podcast is out next week. And thank you for subscribing on Empire Plus and keeping peeled, because there's more shit coming your way over the next few weeks and months. In the build-up, of course, to Avengers Doomsday on December 18th. Oh my God, it's going to be so fucking amazing. Hell belongs to me. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.